Welcome to the Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast, covering the world of publishing and writing with your hosts, Rhiannon Frater and Lori Parker.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 3 of Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast. A writer and a blogger discuss books, writing, TV shows, films, and more. I'm your co-host, Rhiannon Frater.
And I'm your other co-host, Lori Parker.
And we are just thrilled out of our minds to have made it to episode 3, considering that we've had cable outages and technical difficulties, and you wouldn't believe what all's been going on our end. So the fact that we're actually recording right now is pretty awesome, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I can't believe we made it through it.
I know. I mean, seriously, we were trying to put the show together, and there was a lot of problems. So, but we're here now, and just to remind you of who we are, my name is Rhiannon Frater, and I'm an author. I'm a full-time writer, and I wrote the As the World Dies Zombie Trilogy, along with other books such as The Last Bastion of the Living and The Pretty One She Dies Trilogy, and numerous other books that you can find out about at rhiannonfrater.com. And Lori Parker is?
I am the blogger at Contagious Reads, and I blog at Parajunkie, too. And I am writing my first novel.
And so we talk about the book publishing world all the time. And that is why we're doing this podcast, to kind of share our thoughts, what little knowledge we have, which is obviously not about technical stuff. We hope that you learn stuff from the podcast, such as awesome new writers that you may not have heard about, maybe get some writing tips, and maybe find sources of information that you didn't have before. And again, we thank everyone who is, listening to us basically and giving us a shot at, entertaining you and educating you at the same time. A big old thank you, and I'm rambling. So we have a lot of news going on right now with us. I'm just back from Texas Frightmare Weekend, and I'm excited because episode 11 of In Darkness Must Abide, my supernatural serial that I've been writing since last year, is finally coming out. And my husband did the cover art, and it's fabulous. And I want to apologize again for people who are in love with this serial, but because I am self-publishing it, whenever I get a contractual obligation, I have to set it aside. So sometimes the episodes get delayed. But season 3 will end, hopefully, by early summer. Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And you have something exciting going on, is that right?
Yeah. Through the blog, Contagious Reads, we're putting on a Facebook convention. It's the Contagious Reads Horror Con. It's for it's promoting women in horror. And I asked Rhiannon to be part of it, and she said yes. And then our guest on this episode, Emily Goodwin, will also be on a panel. And it'll be all on Facebook, so you can, wear your yoga pants or not wear pants at all.
And conferencing.
Yep. Come hang out and talk to some of your favorite female horror authors and win prizes and vote on awards and all sorts of crazy fun stuff.
So it sounds like one of the best ideas I've ever heard, because women sometimes have to struggle to be seen in this genre. So I love it that we're going to have a little bit of a spotlight on us for that day.
Yeah, I invited some male horror writers, and they were like, I don't have the right chromosomes for this. And I'm like, well, it's not a complete conversation unless you bring all viewpoints into it. So we want men to show up too.
They're not going to be the guests, but they are going to be the ones that are talking, in the conversations, or how are
you
doing?
No, all the panelists will be female horror writers, but I very much would like male horror fans and other male horror writers to show up and converse so that they can, either show their support for the lady writers, or maybe, I don't think all writers or even horror writers or even horror fans realize that female horror writers have a hard time.
I don't think so either. I'm really anxious to talk to Emily Goodwin so we can discuss some of that as well, because she's another female in the genre. But in my personal experience, I have a really great fan base of both men and women, But on occasion, I will have someone say something to me along the lines of, you know, I read your zombie book and I wasn't going to because you're a woman. And I really liked it and I was surprised. And I've had this said to me by both men and women. So I really think for some reason there's a belief that women cannot write scary stuff. So I think it's awesome that you and, you know, Contagious Reads is taking the opportunity to shine a spotlight on women in horror.
Yeah. Some of the panels are like, romance and horror is this chick lit. Because I've seen comments where men are like, oh, I liked it, but then there was this romance. And horror fans in general might not, don't really like romance, but...
You know, I find that amusing, though, because I have read some amazing books by male authors that will have a really explicit sex scene in it, and no one blinks. No one says anything. No one criticizes it. If a woman wrote that same scene, instantaneously, it's a Harlequin novel with zombies or monsters or whatever. It's like men can write, it's like, you know, George R. R. Martin, you know, the guy who writes Game of Thrones. He can write sex scenes in his books all he wants, and no one's going to say to him, oh, you're writing a historical romance or a fantasy romance novel. But if a woman were to do the same thing, instantaneously, her book is considered a romance.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it sounds like I think we're going to have great discussions, and I'm really looking forward to it. And people can find links to it on contagiousreads.com. Is that right?
Yep. And I'm posting about it on Facebook daily, and there is a Facebook event, which I will put on our website.
Awesome. So you guys can check that out at our website. And so there's good news out there. You know, if you want to read something new from me, please check out In Darkness Must Abide. The first episode is free. And we're all the way up to episode 11, and there's two seasons, and the third season will wrap it up. So if you like supernatural, dark shadows kind of stuff, check my book out. And of course, check out Lori's conference, which I think is going to be amazing. We're talking today on Burning Up the Book Sphere. What feedback is good feedback? And Lori, as a fledgling writer, this has been one of your big questions, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's because I have this fear that because I haven't had my work, I mean, I've had it critiqued, but not to the extent as an established writer, that I'll make all the changes and I won't realize that they've just completely edited my personal unique voice out of my book. So that's one of my biggest fears.
Right. And I think what people don't understand with feedback when you're a writer is everything is subjective. And this is something that it's hard. You know, two people can read the same book and come away with completely different ideas of who the characters were and what the plot was like and who they like and who they didn't like. People can come away with just completely different viewpoints on a book. So when you're starting out writing, it's always difficult to know if the feedback you're receiving is actually helpful or not, because everything is subjective. So Lori and I decided to talk about this tonight because she's asked me for some advice, and I'm going to try and share it, and Lori will share what she's learned along the way from writers that she talks to and herself. So what feedback should you be listening to as a writer? I think personally that you should listen to feedback that is constructive for your story. I think that if someone comes back and says, I don't understand why your character is doing X, Y, Z, then you should see if it's in the story. Now, if you've put it into the story and the person's just not seeing it, that's one thing. But maybe legitimately you haven't given a motivation for that character to do that particular thing. So that's an important kind of feedback. Now, if someone comes back to you and says to you, I think that you need to remove all adverbs, adjectives from your book. You cannot have any kind of voice, like active voice is action things, like, you know, like see, spot, run. That's what active voice is in writing. So a lot of editors, mostly indie editors I've noticed, don't like it when you say things like the boy was walking down the street. They want you to say the boy walked down the street. So people get into arguments over what's right and what's wrong. And I think you experienced this, Lori, where they said that if you used an adjective, you were a lazy writer. Was that what it was?
It was adverbs. If you use adverbs, the adverbs are lazy writing.
Right. And I've had someone come to me and they were like, you know, I love your stories, I love your books, but you're a bad writer because you use adjectives and you use adverbs and you use passive voice mixed with active voice. And this is another writer, I just want to specify. And I said, okay. And they're like, you're a great storyteller, but you're a really bad writer. You should try and improve your writing. I'm like, I'm not going to change the way my voice is in my books. There are times when I use fragment sentences. There's times when I use run-on sentences. There's certain things that I do creatively to create tension in my writing. I like to build up emotion. And there's certain words that I think that work very well, and some of those may be adverbs or adjectives. So I'm not interested in changing my voice. I'm more interested in, because I from what everyone tells me, they really are entertained by my writing, most people. But I will end up with editors, not professional editors. Let me not editors like from the big house. Let me put it that way. My tour editor loves me, and my premier editor loves me. My agent loves me. But when you like, I'll have like independent editors come to me and they go, "Oh, well, I'm going to help you get rid of all your adjectives and all your adverbs and all your passive voice." And I'm like, "Well, then you're just changing me, you know? That's how I feel about it."
Yeah, I think when you see a book that has been edited like that, it's sort of like I walked into the room. I picked up the cup. I drank from it. It's a beat, you know, and it gets boring. It like lulls me to sleep. I want you to experiment with words and stuff when I, as a reader. So, as a reader, I find that Lori went into the room and picked up a book. Then she flipped through it. It was beautiful. Or something, you know, just like play around with it.
I think that's one of the dangers of like when people start trying to write by the rules. And we're going to talk about the homogenization of writing in a future podcast. When people start trying to write by the rules, and that's one of the major feedbacks that people get, is like you need to write by the rules. People start freaking out about that they're doing everything wrong, and it shuts them down creatively. Because if you're sitting there, I mean, I remember when the person was saying, "Well, I think that you should get rid of all your adjectives and your adverbs and only write in active voice." And I said, "But then, you know, okay, for example, there's a difference between a man whispering menacingly and a man whispering lovingly." And I said, "And I think that that is where you, when you use those words like, you know, menacingly or lovingly, they add to that sentence." And the response was, "Well, then you should just word it differently." But usually, when people end up wording it differently, it becomes extremely long-winded.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't need it to be long-winded. Sometimes you just need it to be easier to read. I mean, because you got to think about the reader's not going to want to sit there and read three sentences about the way this guy's talking to this other person, you know?
Yeah.
So, I
Stop
mean,
padding
I.
your word count.
Well, also the word count is really important too. By the way, with feedback, the average length of most novels is 75,000 words. And you have to make sure that every word you're using in that book adds to the story, to the characters. So if you end up removing adjectives and adverbs and you're trying to explain a simple thing through a much longer explanation, you're going to end up padding your word count, basically.
Yeah.
And that's going to work against you because then, you know, if you sell it to a big house, they're going to come back and go, "Eh, you got to cut 30,000 words out of your book." So, what kind of feedback is good feedback? I think if you're a starting writer, the kind of feedback you really need is if your story is coming across clearly. Is your plot understandable? Are your characters' motivations making sense? Are your sentences making sense? This is another kind of feedback that is good feedback because if you write a sentence, and I have friends who write in metaphors, and sometimes I use metaphors, but not a lot. But I have some friends who use metaphors a lot in their writing, and their writing is known as being very beautiful by their fans. Their fans really love that their work use of metaphor. They it's like poetry. It's like painting a picture. And I'm losing track of what I'm trying to say, but my point of all of this is if somebody comes back and tries to take some of that uniqueness out of your voice, like if you try to eliminate all these metaphors that you're using, if they're trying to eliminate things that are distinctly you need to pay attention and think to yourself, is this actually improving my writing? Is this improving my story? Is this improving my characters? Or is just them trying to make me write just like them? And I know I got off track somewhere in the middle of there, but that's okay.
I think in it, there's this also, like, there's this thing where people are like, don't info dump, show don't tell. But sometimes you just got to tell the reader, you know? Sometimes it's like, yeah, the window was open. You don't need to show me that the window was open. Just tell me that the freaking window was open.
I think there's this article. I wish I could remember who wrote it. It might have been a writability blog. I'm not sure. But they said something about, maybe it wasn't there. I can't remember now. But they said something about, you know, they say show, don't tell. But sometimes you need to tell because you don't want to show, like, okay, if your character had this horrible childhood and a terrible divorce and where you meet the character in the book is right when they're starting to reboot their life, you don't need to show their terrible childhood and their horrible divorce. You can tell the reader that that's what they've had and give them that background information so they know where their starting point is. So sometimes tell is important. And
yeah.
Definitely.
Don't treat your readers like they're stupid.
Yeah. So what feedback is good feedback? Also, is who you get it from. I'm a strong believer that you should find people that are going to kick you in the teeth. You know, that are going to tell you when you're screwing up. And I think that if they're giving you constructive criticism, you'll know it. And if they're giving you criticism that's tearing you down, you'll know that too. And somebody asked me, how do you know? I'm like, when you want to stop writing because of the critique.
Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah. That's when you know it's not helping you. And that's when you know that you need to remove that from the equation. I'm a firm believer in beta readers. Find a group of people who will read your work and give you an honest response. And then you have to determine, you know, what to take from that. Are they all saying the same thing? Are they all telling, you know, is everyone hitting on the same sore spot in your, you know, what's the word?
Manuscript.
In your manuscript. I'm thinking book, my book. So that's some of our ideas for feedback. We'd love to hear what you think about what kind of feedback writers should listen to, especially if you're a writer. You can always visit us at our podcast page for the episode, or you can visit us on Facebook. We have a group there, and you can interact with us there. So that wraps up our Burning Up the Booksphere discussion. And we also believe in recommending books and films and TV shows for inspiration, because we both believe that it's through watching or being experiencing creative things you get your creative juices flowing. So my recommend is American Horror Story, and you haven't watched it yet, have you, Lori?
No, I don't. I'm one of those lame people that doesn't watch a lot of TV.
You
like,
are.
My ex used to make fun of me because I would read while I was watching TV. And he's like, he'd change the channel and be like, hey, I was watching that. And he's like, no, you're reading a book.
Well, the reason why I'm recommending American Horror Story, especially if you're writing a horror novel, is because it's an anthology series. Every season is different. You really should watch it, Lori. I'm not lying to you. You should watch it. The first season was called Murder House, and it's all about this house that's filled with ghosts and murder and mayhem, and it's really cool. And the second season was Asylum, which is all about this haunted asylum, and that one had, like, demonic possession and all sorts of weird stuff. Nazi scientist. I can't even tell you what all was in it. It was so crazy and over the top, but it was so great. And the third one was pretty much my favorite, which was American Horror Story Coven, which took place in New Orleans. And the reason why I'm recommending this is because I think sometimes we get so caught up in series, we forget the beauty of an anthology. It's really cool sometimes when you can have different stories kind of in the same world. Sometimes they intersect and sometimes they don't. And just the creative process of watching how these writers kind of link things together that seem really separate is really fun as a writer. And they really sometimes did things that were really shocking. So that's why I'm recommending for inspiration American Horror Story. And if you don't need to start at season one because every season's different. So I kind of recommend, I don't know, out of all of them, I recommend Coven more because I think Coven was just so much fun. But it could be also because it had Angela Bassett and Jessica Lange in it, and I just love both of them acting together. So what's your recommend?
Game of Thrones, the TV show. I recommend the book as well. But
what's this? You didn't watch TV and then you recommend Game of Thrones?
I actually won all three seasons off of eBay. So I'm binge watching the first three seasons. I'm on the third season right now. And I read the books several years ago. So, and I have friends that haven't read the books. So I'm watching their news feeds as season four is happening and they're complaining about spoilers. And I'm just laughing because the books have been out for like, what, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, he takes forever to write.
So the reason why I'm recommending this is because it's if you have read the books, it's really awesome to see how they translated George R.R. Martin onto the screen, because he gets kind of he goes over the top with his descriptions, and I love the books, but there are times when I find myself skimming them because I'm not a high fantasy fan. So this is great for people that want to live in that fantasy world but don't really want to read high fantasy. So and Jon Snow.
Yeah, Jon Snow. He's yummy. My husband and I binge watched the first three seasons too, and we're not watching any of the fourth season until it's done. Because we're bingers. We just love to sit on the sofa and just watch it straight through. And I love the character of Jon Snow because I think he's not a perfect character. I think that's kind of what's appealing about him. He's kind of a dork.
Yeah. he's a dork, and there's that... I just watched like the second episode of season three, and there's that moment when he's talking to Mance Rider, and they're like, why do you want to join us? And he tells that I want to be free. And they, you know, they're like, we don't believe that. And then he tells the truth, but it's only part of the truth. And it's so cool how he is like able to sell that. And Kit Harington does a great job as Jon.
Yeah,
Snow.
He does. I love Arya. I think Arya is almost my
That's
favorite
my
character.
My prediction for the end of the books is that Arya is the only one that left alive.
See, I was kind of wondering about that myself, but then again, he takes such joy, George R.R. Martin, in killing characters that you don't expect to live, I mean to die. I kind of think that maybe she'll end up on the chopping block along with Daenerys, because those are the two characters that you really just don't think are gonna die. It doesn't seem like,
because you want them to make it to their end goal more than anybody else, because they actually have, like, Jon, you know, he has the war and all this other stuff, but Arya, you know, needs to get back to what's left of her family, and Daenerys, you really want to see her on the Iron Throne.
Yeah, I do want to see her on the throne. I think she's a great, I hear on the show she's a better character than in the books, so I don't know if that's true or not, but I always enjoy...
I liked her well enough in the books. I really... And they've done a really good, like on The Walking Dead. I'm going to compare it to the other big TV show out there right now, The Walking Dead. If you've read the comics, Andrea is awesome in the comics, like the best character out of the whole entire series. And on the TV show, she was not. But whereas
people couldn't wait for her to die. But yeah. they have a problem on that show writing good women character, female yeah. characters anyway.
But in Game of Thrones, like they have every single actor and the writers have just completely nailed the characters from the book. Like,
I think Cersei, like, it's her name, Cersei, right? The sister. Oh, she's so complicated. I think that's one of the things I love about that character. She's so,
yeah,
so complicated. And it's, I think the one thing I do want to say about American Horror Story and Game of Thrones is that they have complex female characters that are not stereotypes. They have motivations that are beyond wanting to be in, you know, with a man or have babies. And I think that's one of the things that I really enjoy about both, because I watch Game of Thrones too, is how refreshing it is to have a female character that's portrayed like real female, you know, real women. You know, we are much more than what Hollywood and sometimes, you know, books, unfortunately, allow us to be, which is another reason why I'm so excited that we're talking to Emily Goodwin. So, I mean, I'm sure she's going to have a lot to say on this subject.
C.
So we're very pleased to introduce the following author. Her name is Emily Goodwin, and she is the author of multiple titles, including the Amazon best-selling series, the Contagium series. She resides in Indiana with her husband and daughter and a dog whose name is Vader. And along with writing, Emily enjoys riding her horse, designing and making costumes, and doing cosplay. So Emily has degrees in psychology and nursing, and she works part-time as a nurse in addition to her writing. And according to her, her biography is lame and it sucks. And as you can tell, it's anything but that. So, Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're really excited to have you on tonight, and you have a little baby, so if there's a crying baby in the background, that's what it is, and it's not Lori's victims in the basement.
My victim's out screaming at her Kindle right now.
So, Emily, tell us about the Contagium series.
Well, I started it, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago. It seems so long ago. It actually started from a really weird dream that I had. In my dream, I had my appendix taken out, and when I woke up, I realized that the surgeon replaced my appendix with pot roast. It was, like, totally normal in the dream. So I woke up from surgery, and I was in a luxury hotel that was, like, half a dog kennel. So I was, like, walking around looking for my dog, and then I just realized there were zombies everywhere. And I woke up, and, like, of course, I thought that was a really weird dream, but I also thought, I kind of like zombies. I want to write about them. So I was very new to the zombie genre then. I'd seen a very limited amount of zombie movies, and I don't think I'd ever read a zombie book at that point. Mm-hmm. So that strange dream just really sparked my interest in zombies, oddly enough.
So you came into writing your book kind of fresh and new to the zombie genre, or writing it. So what do you think makes your series different? I mean, that you didn't have maybe all these tropes and stereotypes and stuff that sometimes haunts the genre. How is your book different because maybe you didn't know about those?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't know about any of them because I had never read any zombie books before. And I wrote it while I was in nursing school, so I had a lot of input from other students and nurses that I were teaching my classes, as well as some doctors from my clinicals, about the most like medically realistic way for a virus to turn somebody into zombies, because as much as I'd love to believe that there could really be a zombie apocalypse, like, it's just not going to happen. If you don't have blood flow or oxygen, you cannot move. Mm-hmm. So I try to make my zombies as realistic as possible. And I think one thing, it's just a really small detail that I mentioned in the book, is that my zombies still have heartbeats.
Okay, because if
you don't have blood pumping through your body, your cells would, you know, crack and die. You just could not move. That's one thing that gets kind of bothers me about zombies, is how we want them to be real and not seen as fantasy, but yet it's not realistic. So I try to stick with the facts as much as I could.
See, that's the interesting thing about, I think, when we're writing about zombies, you know, because As the World Dies, there's ghosts in As the World Dies. And I had people send me scathing emails saying, you know, it was so unrealistic that I had ghosts. And I'm like, it's so unrealistic that I had zombies. Because, I mean, for some reason, people consider zombies to be realistic, like a realistic monster. And they really aren't. They're just as fantastical as vampires or ghosts or anything else. Well, I don't know if we can put ghosts in there, but I mean, they're just as fantastical as other make-believe creatures.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing, I had my zombies start out as crazy. I had different parts of the brain being affected, like the frontal lobes, which is what the part of your brain which controls your emotion and your drive. Mm-hmm. And in my book, the virus starts to eat away at the brain. Mm-hmm. They lose everything that makes them human. And then from there on, the central nervous system starts to shut down, which is why their skin would get all the traditional rotting appearance, because the capillaries would be like one of the first to go. And from there on, they get that traditional zombie look, which I guess is more of the fantasy because it's not going to happen. But I tried to stick with it as much as I could.
So it was originally 3 books, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
And you've written a 4th one.
Yes. The second book ended up being split into 2.
Okay. And you originally self-published, but you're now with one of my publishers, Permuted Press, correct?
Correct.
And how did that happen? Did you take your books to them, or did they come to you?
No, it was back when Jacob owned the company. He emailed me asking about the books, and I really didn't know too much about Permuted or really publishing at the time, because I was still so new to it. So I just didn't really think too much of it. I thought it sounded too good to be true, and it turned out It really was true.
And you're going to have a re-release, right? They're going to release the three books along with the fourth one. Do you know what your release date is on those yet? Or
starts in July. I don't have a specific date in July.
Oh, that's cool. So it's coming up. So anybody who hasn't read the old self-published version can now read the Permuted Press version.
Yes.
Excellent. And, okay, I got to... What has the reaction been from people around you that you wrote about zombies, like family, friends, coworkers?
It's really interesting because people will look at me and say, really, you write zombies? I would think you'd write about romance. And I don't know why. I get that reaction all the time. I think because I'm very quiet when people meet me, they just assume that I'm, I don't know, like not into anything remotely like horror or scary. And it's definitely a stereotype that unless you're, you know, like openly into like goth or dress and all black, that you just don't like that stuff. And just, I find it really interesting.
I don't even think it has to do with being in goth and black, as the girl that's been a goth since the 90s says. I get it too all the time. People have says, well, why don't you write about, why aren't you writing romance novels and why aren't you writing urban fantasy? I think it has to do with our gender.
Oh, definitely.
So I also have to ask you this question. Well, I have to allude. Emily, you are heavily armed. You're ready for the zombocalypse. Am I right?
Yes. The funny story, when I was a kid, I used to shoot BB guns all the time. My sisters would be inside playing Barbies, which I like to play Barbies too occasionally. But I would take my little BB guns out on the deck and lay down and pretend to be a sniper. So I've just always been into shooting, and something my dad and I do together. We like to set up targets. They have a farm, so we just set up targets in the pasture, and we just always shoot. And I actually got my husband into it. He was very anti-guns for a while, and now he owns his own, and we go to the range or go to my parents' house and shoot together.
Lori and I joke that we're going to your house when it happens.
Yep, that's the plan. Head to Emily's.
So, you do have other books that you've written, the Guardian Legacy series, Unbound, Reaper, and Moonlight. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, is Moonlight out yet, or is that one that has yet to come?
No, it's my current work in progress.
Okay. And what is the Guardian Legacy series about?
It's about a girl named Honora who is a witch. And I sound so lame when I talk about it. And I'm not trying to give away too much. She has a boyfriend that's part of an old ancient order of demon hunters. And they just kind of fight demons together. I guess it's like a huge, you could say like a mashup of Buffy and Charmed and Supernatural and all those, you know, demon hunting, fighting magic shows and books all together. It's everything that I love.
So is it young adult or is it... Adult.
Young adult.
Young adult. Okay, cool. But can adults read it and enjoy it? Do you think it, you know how Buffy had that crossover between teens and adults? Do you think it has?
Yeah, definitely. I would say it'd be more appropriate for like older teens. I don't think like, I don't know if it's 8 times. It's so, you know, the number is so limiting, but I think more mature teens would be more appropriate for, because there's a lot of violence in it.
There's also some sexy times too.
And Lori likes those sexy times.
There are.
Is this one of your book boyfriends?
It's been a while since I've read them, so I'll have to, she has to hurry up and finish it so I can bait him.
And find out if he's still your book boyfriend?
Yep.
And Emily and I share a love of mermaids. And you've written a mermaid book, correct?
Correct.
Is it one book or is it going to be multiple books?
It will eventually be a series whenever I have time to sit down and write the rest of the series.
So do you, I sometimes have a problem because, you know, I consider myself to be a horror writer. So I write about monsters and sometimes I kind of bang up against other genres like science fiction, urban fantasy. And you have your fingers in a lot of different ones. So do you feel like people are sometimes thrown off by the fact that you're writing like, you know, the Guardian series, which is kind of like Buffy and Supernatural, like people who like those shows will probably really like this book series. And then people who like The Walking Dead and zombie movies will like the Contagion series. Do you feel like you have two different groups of fans or do you think that they are, you know, how do you regard that or what's your feedback on that?
I don't really come across it too much. The only fans that I get that will tell me flat out they don't want to read my other books are the hardcore zombie fans. They're just not interested in anything else. But most people, a lot of people don't know that I write other books other than zombies. And the people who do find out are excited and they say they like my writing and want to read them. So for the most part, I haven't really come across that issue. It's just those few hardcore zombie fans that aren't willing to break out of the zombie genre.
Yeah, I know. I've noticed that too. Like the really hardcore zombie fans are absolutely like they won't even read about any other kind of monster. Like they're not going to go pick up a werewolf book. They're not going to pick up even like, you know, like for example, The Strain by Guillermo del Toro. They're not even going to pick that up. It's just they're really locked into zombies, you mm-hmm. know, and they don't really like deviating from that, which, you know, I like it when they buy my zombie books, so I'm not going to complain, but I kind of wish they'd read my other stuff too, but
yeah, me too.
So who are your influences when it comes to writing? I mean, is there, a particular author that had a big impact on you or somebody that you would like to follow their path of success or?
Well, I mean, I grew up reading the Harry Potter series. I think that was the first series that really made me realize like what like a huge world you can create with books and just how you can get lost in fantasy. And Harry Potter is such a big part of my life growing up. It still is. I may or may not have Hermione's wand and a butterbeer mug. I'm thinking out of right now.
And who wouldn't mind having the money of J.K. Rowling
either? Okay, I wouldn't complain there, my own theme park.
But you've done well with the Contagium series. Didn't it put you through nursing school? Isn't that what you told me one time?
Yeah, I was able to pay my way through nursing school with just my self-published royalties.
Yeah, so a lot of people who think, oh, you're never going to make any money off of self-publishing. I mean, you can do well with it, that's for sure.
You know, that was pretty much my attitude when I started was I love writing. You know, I'm just not going to get my hopes up too high because it's such a hard thing to get into. And, you know, I think a lot of it's talent and some of it's luck and just, you know, networking and just really working your way in. And you have to work hard, but it's completely possible.
So our this episode's hot topic for burning up the book sphere was what feedback is good feedback. So what feedback is important to you? Is there a particular... You know, Lori and I have talked about, you know, beta readers and reader reviews, blogger reviews, things like that. But what feedback is the most valuable to you as a writer?
Well, throughout the years, I've developed a team of beta readers that I know, you know, pretty well. I know them to be honest and to critique the book fairly. And I think it's important to remember when you have beta readers that it's just an opinion. You know, you can write the best book in the whole wide world and not everybody's going to like it. Like, yeah. Me, the Harry Potter books are like, there's nothing that's going to compare to Harry Potter to me. But there are people who don't like Harry Potter. Like, you just have to realize not everybody likes everything.
Right. It's all subjective.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if you have 5 beta readers point out the same thing to you, then maybe you should take a look at your book and, you know, reevaluate it. But if you have one person point out teeny tiny little flaws in every single, you know, page, it's probably just their own personal opinion of being, you know, either too picky or just not a book that's a good fit for them.
Mm-hmm. And Lori's one of your betas.
Yes, she is wonderful. She's honest.
I feel like I'm the nicest beta in the world. I'm like, oh, it's good.
No, I hate that. I hate when I get those, oh, it's good, don't change it comments, because there's always something that can be improved. Like, rip this book apart. I beg her to be mean to me.
I try really hard.
She's like, I try to be mean to you, but because Lori's one of my betas too, and she'll come back and go, yeah, it's pretty good. I'm like, well, I'll ask her very specific questions at that point. And she always answers honestly, but she'll finish, you know, she'll go, yeah, well, that character was XYZ or whatever. And then she'll finish going, but it's still really good.
Yeah, no, definitely. That was, and I don't know if I'd even say it was a hard lesson to learn, but the critical betas, the ones that aren't afraid to, you know, so much as hurt your feelings, but point out the flaws. That's what's the helpful. Mm-hmm. Those are the helpful comments.
Yeah, I mean, if she asked me, do you think this part could be cut? I'm not going to be like, oh, all your writing's beautiful. I'm going to be like, yeah, you know, you don't need that. She's going to be like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, you don't need that.
But that's true, though, because I think sometimes as writers, we overthink stuff and we try to have maybe too much information in there, unnecessary information, like you really don't need to know what brand of bubble gum they're chewing, or you know what I mean, just little things like that. But at the same time, sometimes we think there's information in there that's not because it's in our head.
Oh, yeah, and I definitely know that I've done that before. Like, I just knew what they were doing, but I didn't write it in.
Mm-hmm. And that's where Lori usually nails me. I remember she pointed out, and she just baited the mesmerize for me, and she pointed out that she couldn't visualize the scene. Well, the scene is based in the Palazzo in Las Vegas, where I've been there. I went there on my honeymoon, so it's very vivid in my head, but I wasn't painting the picture or setting the stage in the book. So when she told me that, I had to go and totally revamp about 2 or 3 chapters to get that visual in there for the reader.
Yeah, so. I was like, are they going in a circle? And you're like, no, not at all.
Like, I don't know. I was like, oh, obviously I didn't, I, you know, because it was clear in my head. It was perfectly, but if you hadn't been there, you wouldn't know what I was talking about. So I rewrote it and sent it to her. And she goes, oh, now I can see it. You did okay. So I guess my next big question for you, because, you know, you're female in the genre. What do you have to say to any other female writers who might be out there who are not sure if they'll be accepted by the zombie fans?
I say just don't give up and be proud to be the minority. You know, I love when I like, as much as weird as it is when people are surprised that I write horror, like, I kind of like that. Like, I take it as a compliment. Like, you know, you're doing something that is out of somebody's expectations. And I like that. I like, you know, breaking the barrier a little bit and not being afraid to be yourself. And if you love zombies and horror, then go for it. Don't be ashamed of it. And you will find other people who will support you. There are lots of great authors out there, like Rhiannon, who will, you know, take you under your wing when you're new and help you out and encourage you. It's not all scary.
No, it's, I agree with you. It's, when I started back in 05, I was writing online, As the World Dies. It was originally an online serial. I was like the only female. And I would get messages from other females saying to me, oh my God, you're so brave to write this, because I want to, but I don't think the guys are going to like it. And mm-hmm. And it's really rewarding for me that now, what, 9 years later, there are so many women in the genre now. And I just was pointed out to me last night that on the front cover of Permuted Press, their bestsellers, all but two of the books were written by women. So... yay. I know the minute the Contagious series comes out that that's going to be up there immediately.
I hope so.
I think so. I believe it. Don't you, Lori? It's a good series.
It is. It's really good.
So tell us really quick, like, give us a summary of the Contagium series so that people know what it's about, what kind of adventure it is, and what they can anticipate.
Okay. Well, that's another thing that you can probably relate to. The main character is a female, which is another thing that I guess is weird in zombie series.
Yeah. I got a deck. People were like, Jenny and Katie just blew them away, that there were two female protagonists. As World Lies just blew them away. So
yeah, like, that was one thing. Without having read a lot of zombie books going into this, it didn't seem weird to me writing about a female. Mm-hmm. So the main character's name is Arissa, and when you first meet her, she is just kind of struggling to find herself and find her place in the world. The series takes place roughly several years in the future, where the country is going through another Great Depression. Mm-hmm. But she's lost her job. She can't afford school unless she has to drop out of college and move in with her aunt in Indianapolis. And she just starts to notice people are, you know, fighting. There's a lot of tempers flaring. Nothing really makes sense. And she gets sick and has to go get her appendix taken out, which is a reference to my pot roast dream. But instead of having her wake up in the hospital with zombies, I thought that was too cliche. She goes home and then comes back for her checkup. And when she's there, she gets attacked by a crazy guy. And she gets taken to exam room, and she, you know, through a series of events that I won't give away, she passes out. And when she wakes up, she's in the hospital basement with a doctor named Patrick. He's a sexy Irish doctor with a very sexy accent.
We love those Irishmen.
Yes. And in my dream cast, Richard Madden, who plays Rob Stark, is my Patrick, which just makes it so much better.
Excellent.
Yeah, so he takes her in, and then, you know, throughout the first book, it's just really about Arissa trying to find her friends and her family and surviving. And just all, like, I really wanted to include a lot of the stuff that would, you know, really affect humanity more than just the fighting of zombies. Like, there's food and shelter issues, and what happens if you have somebody in your group that's sick. Mm-hmm. There's one little girl in her group that has cancer without medication. I just, like, the real implications of that, and just trying to find a meaning to keep living when everyone around you is dead. And why would you want to live in a world where you think everyone else is dead and all your family and friends are dead? And she just keeps going on through that. And then eventually she comes across Hayden, which I know is one of Lori's book boyfriends. He's probably my favorite book boyfriend that I've written. And he is a Marine veteran. He served 2 tours in Afghanistan, and he and Arissa just kind of hit it off. And I just feel like I'm going to give everything away if I keep going on.
Okay, so basically what you need to know about the Contagium series is that it's got a great female protagonist and apparently a really hot guy named Hayden, who's an ex-Marine. And you got to realize he's written by a gun nut named Emily. And it sounds very exciting because you try to deal with it realistically. And I think that's... I hate to say it, but that's one of the things I really love about women writing in the genre, because we really... I don't know if it's because... of the way we regard life, but I noticed that there's a lot more tendency to kind of address things and not so much of a wish fulfillment Rambo dream. You know, like a lot of the male stuff is like guns everywhere and they're shooting everything up and they're the hero. And even though the guy in the beginning of the book has never done anything amazing or whatever, but I mean, but I've noticed a lot more men are now writing that deeper thing. But for a long time in the genre, in a lot of the books, it was just male wish fulfillment, guns and killing things.
Yeah. Yeah, and you said something that another thing that really gets me in the genre is when you had these ordinary people that just suddenly like just become these expert like gunsmiths and they have like martial arts skills and survival training just for no reason. I hate that.
In the zompocalypse, everybody knows how to hotwire a car.
Like, give your character some background.
I think that was one of the things, like, with somebody was real critical of Katie and Jenny both knowing how to shoot guns. One, I live in Texas, so that explains a lot. But Katie's father's an ex-Marine, and Jenny at one point even talks about that when she was a kid, she used to always go out to her grandparents' ranch and shoot guns with her brothers. So, I mean, you kind of can put that into the books, but people just get these kind of things in their head that women can't do anything, that we're just completely incompetent and we can't do. And it's weird because women are often the sharpshooters in the Israeli army. So... So women are actually really good shots. We have a really good eye, but I guess we should wrap up the interview because we could talk to Emily forever. But just a really fun little side note, Contagious Reads, which is Lori's book review blog site, was named after the Contagium series, and Emily lobbied really hard for this podcast to be called the Contagious Podcast.
I said Contagious Reads Podcast.
So she had to be one of our first guests on the show automatically. And we're very grateful that she came on. And so just to wrap things up, people can pick up your one series. What's it called again? The
Guardian Legacy.
Guardian Legacy. Sorry, I have a terrible memory. Guardian Legacy books are already on Amazon, right? And
yeah,
probably. So they can already pick up your books there. The Contagium series is going to start being released by Permuted Press starting in July, so keep an eye out for that. And people can find out more about you where? Where can we find you?
On my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/EmilyGoodwinBooks. My blog, just emily-goodwin.blogspot.com.
Awesome. And so... thank you for dealing with us. We had all sorts of little technical difficulties trying to get this up and running. My internet was dying all day today and all sorts of other things. So we're really appreciative that you joined us for the podcast, and I wish you all the best. I think you're a pretty amazing lady.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me.
So again, we really want to thank Emily Goodwin for joining us. She did. I just love talking to her. How about you, Lori?
She's so much fun. She's like, I'm so nervous, but she did awesome. So
I know. And I learned a little bit more about, you know, I hadn't read that Guardian Legacy series yet, and I have it on my Kindle. So I really need to dive into that because I love Buffy.
It's really, you know. It's really cool.
I love all that kind of thing. So it sounds really fun. And you know, and zombie fans, you should be excited because after being not for sale for almost a year, I think it's been, the Contagium series is finally coming back to bookshelves. So that's really exciting. So we are going to be finishing up the podcast with what we like to do is a quick book review because we love books and sometimes we read the same book, and we are reviewing Here by Denise Grover Swank. And I discovered this book because of Espresso Reads, which is another it's another review blog, and Giselle had recommended it, and it sounded really interesting, so I picked it up, And just to summarize, the beginning of the book seems to start off almost like a contemporary novel, where it's a young girl, she's a teenager, she was in a terrible car accident where her best friend died, and she lives with the guilt of it, and she's just really in a deep despair. And what was really interesting about the writing is, though the character is really depressed and you feel really bad for her, you never get to the point where you feel like you want to shake her or be angry with her. You feel like you're kind of there in the mix. You have great sympathy for what she's going through. Is that correct? Would you say that?
Yeah, I really liked the main character.
And the thing that was fun about the her name was Julia.
Yeah.
Julia seemed, she's a teenager, but she made sense as a teenager. She didn't seem too adult. She seemed just like kind of the teenager I remembered being, you know, where everything is very deep and emotional and you're kind of overwhelmed. And you just, I don't know, I felt for her. The interesting thing about the story is that after she wakes up from the car accident, she has a bracelet on her wrist that she has no idea where it came from. So she's in this horrible accident. Her best friend Monica dies and she has this bracelet on. It's a complete mystery. And then the really popular boy in school who never looked at her twice before all of a sudden shows an interest in her. And you start seeing that things are not quite right. And then there's a point in the book where the book goes from being like this maybe sort of contemporary young adult coming of age book, it all of a sudden flips completely about. And I can't even give away what happens because it would kind of ruin the surprise, don't you think?
Yeah. It's like two genres in one book, but it works so perfectly.
It's just, it really, I think the thing that was amazing about it was I was completely invested in the story where I thought it was going, but when it has the switch over, I was there. I was on board. I was completely invested with it and just, I loved it. I thought it was really, really great. It was a great book, and I highly recommend it because there's two books, Here and There. Again, they're both by Denise Grover Swank, and I gave it 4 stars because I really liked it a lot. And I might even go 4.5 because it's almost, it's not, I compare everything to Jenny Pox. It's not Jenny Pox great, but it's close. Jael Bryan needs to pay me for advertising Jenny Pox.
I gave it 4 stars too because it was really well done overall.
I think so too. And the second book I think I liked just as much or even better. So that's a really good recommend right there. So we're trying to get a book of the month going. We haven't selected a book yet. If you would love to join us in reading a book, please go to our podcast page or find us on Facebook and join the group. We're right now voting. I think one of the books is Dracula. I can't remember what the other one is. I don't know how Dracula. I've read Dracula, but I highly recommend it. But we're still looking, and if we don't end up doing a we might pick it in the second week of May if we can't come to a consensus. Lori and I might just pick something because we want a little bit more options than what we have right now, but we'll look at that. But you can always go and make a recommend or vote on the two books that are already up. And as always, you know, we want to hear your feedback. We want to hear from you. Tell us what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And you can find us at, email us at wickeddreamspodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us, like I said, on the web. And I already forgot it again.
It's
we can't remember our own website. It's at the end of the podcast. We've had technical difficulties like you wouldn't believe.
I want to put my fingers on the keyboard and test it out so bad, but I don't want to make tapping noises.
Yeah, because our producer may kill us, and she's wonderful. We want to give a shout out also to our producer Jennifer, who doesn't steer us wrong and makes us sound really great. So until our next episode, have beautiful nightmares and wicked dreams. And we are going to have another great guest next week. And we are going to stun and amaze you without technical difficulties in episode 4. So have a great one and bye.
Bye.
And just one more thing before we go. Emily Goodwin was kind enough to offer a giveaway for our listeners. So please make sure you check out www.bnwdpodcast.com and enter the giveaway through Rafflecopter. And it's going to be a lot of fun to read her work, I assure you. So just remember, enter the giveaway, and we will have more giveaways coming up for you in the next coming podcast.
This has been the Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast. Find us on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Visit our website at bnwdpodcast.com or email us at wickeddreamspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.